If you were to write your own obituary, what would you write? What would you want said about you? Or maybe you feel like, hey, dude, that is way too heavy. It's early in the morning. It's cold outside. It's cold inside. I don't even want to process that right now. Let me ask you like this. If you were to get to the end of your life, what would people thank you for? If people were going to line up to talk to you and say, thank you for, what would that be? See, it all connects back to the question we asked last week. And if you weren't here last week, the question was, what breaks your heart? Because we're in a season, we're in a time of the year, and it swings around every 12 months, the beginning of a year, where in January, we begin to process some things, and we kind of ask the question, what do I do about me? How do I get healthier? How do I get wealthier? How do I get smarter? How do I have better relationships? How do I improve my marriage? How do I better my parenting? There's this focus. What do I do about me? But we talked about a bigger question, because we've been asking that question year after year after year. And for many, not much has changed. A few things, but not much. So there's a bigger question than what do I do about me. The bigger question is, what needs to be done around me? We shift from a focus on self-improvement to what does God want to use me to maybe help improve somewhere in the world? What breaks your heart? Because the answer to that question is tied to what needs to be done around you. So if you had to finish the statement, at the end of my life, I would like people to line up and thank me for, what would it be? I don't think anybody would say, hey, thank you for having an awesome house. Thank you for having that car. Thank you for paying off your debt. That's important. You should do that. If you have debt, you should pay it off. But I don't think anybody's going to thank you at the end of your life for that. Thank you for losing weight. Maybe your spouse, but there won't be a line of people. If there is, that's a different discussion. But what will people thank you for? And I think the reason we sort of push back from this, the reason we don't want to think about what breaks our heart is because then we have to do something about it and we don't feel like we're capable. There are other people more talented. There are other people that have more resources. There are other people better positioned or have a better education. So surely it's not me that needs to do something about what breaks my heart. Surely other people can do that better. And we use that as an excuse because the reality is to do something about what breaks my heart is going to cost me a little bit of me. And we don't like that. We are naturally this. We are life preservers. I don't want to give up any of me. In fact, my life is built around my comfort and my desires and what I want. And I don't want to have to give up any part of my life because to answer the question, what breaks your heart? If you're going to do something about it, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you some time. It's going to cost you perhaps some money. It's going to cost you a little bit of focus. It's going to cost you on some level. It's going to cost you a piece of you. And we are life preservers. We don't want that. But Jesus had a whole lot to say about this. And as we stand at the second Sunday of a brand new year where I'm praying and our leadership is praying that this would be the best year of your life so far, it requires something of us to achieve that. Because if we keep rolling like we've been rolling, if we stay in the same cycles and the same patterns, it's going to be the same kind of year. There'll be a few differences, but at its core, you're going to be just as empty, just as broken, just as confused. You'll have just as many questions. You'll feel like you missed something. And next January, you'll make yourself some promises, and often they'll be the same promises. You won't feel it quite as much because it's been 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 12 years. You've been making the same promises. And they're all about you. Jesus had something to say about it, and I don't want to summarize that and then tell you what he said. We're kind of flipping it this week. He said, whoever devotes themselves to themselves will have nothing but themselves to show for themselves. Whoever devotes themselves to themselves will have nothing to show but themselves, will have nothing but themselves to show for themselves. Jesus has a way of communicating, and we're going to look at the verses in a few minutes, where we begin to wrap our minds around the fact that if I live my life just for me, if my whole focus is what should I do about me, if I spend my time focused on that, rather than pondering what breaks my heart and what God might want me to do about it, if I live for me, my life will be a total loss. I will get to the end of life, this thing that the Bible describes as a vapor, a mist that passes so quickly. And my life could be summed up as a total loss. Now, I don't want that for me, and I don't want that for you, and I don't believe you want that for you. So what do we need to do? How do we need to think? What do we need to consider to ensure we have the best shot this year of living the life God created us to live? Having the marriage God desires, having the dating relationships if you're not married God desires, or having the career, or having the friendships, having the you that God desires, being the parent God desires. What does that look like? How do we get there? The Bible says in Luke chapter 14 that large crowds were traveling with Jesus. Now, this was not uncommon. Large crowds, hundreds of people, wherever Jesus went, large crowds were traveling with Jesus and turning to them. See, they traveled with him. They were always with him. It'd be like if when I finished speaking today after the second service and went to the parking lot to get in my car, all of you'd be out there waiting on me. And I'd get in my car and I'd go to a restaurant and, and all of you would come in that restaurant. And then I'd go home and all of you would show up at my house. And I'm glad you don't do that. I'm glad you go home. I love you, but yeah, that'd be a little crowded. And so imagine Jesus always having to deal with large crowds. And listen, in those days, those crowds, there was no deodorant. There was no Tide. These were people who were broken and messy. It may have just been a little more obvious. We're just as broken and we're just as messy. We've just learned how to cover it a little bit better. These were people who had oozing wounds and issues of blood. These were people who were financially devastated. These were people whose lives were a wreck. These were people in many ways who had nothing. And all they wanted to do was to touch him. It was like zombie land. All they wanted to do was just try to get to him and touch him. And it's not like he could jump in his Chevrolet and drive off. My man had to get on a donkey, and it's like, and people are like, Jesus, you know we can walk as fast as you're riding on the donkey. Large crowds are everywhere. That's why he spent so much time by the Sea of Galilee, because the only way to sometimes push back and get away for a little bit, because we all need a little bit of that rest, the only way was sometimes to get in a boat. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus and turning to them. Now, it's going to feel like instead of turning to them, he turns on them. He says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters. Wait. Jesus is saying we need to hate our family? We just rolled through Christmas, and some of you saw family you don't normally see, and you're thinking, no problem. I got that one down. I didn't know that was okay, but I'm good apparently. That's not what he's saying. He's not talking about the emotion of hate. What does it mean when he says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate, that's a strong word, father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters? Because there are other places in Scripture that say, if you hate someone, it's just as though you've murdered them. He's not talking about the emotion of hate. What Jesus is beginning to describe is that you have to determine, and I have to determine, who is the supreme authority in your life and mine? Who is going to influence us the most? Who has the final say in our decisions? Whose opinion do we live for? The people closest to us? The people that we love the most? He goes further, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, Jesus isn't saying that you need to say, I hate my life. That's not what he's talking about. It's not an emotional thing. He's saying, who is the ultimate supreme authority? Is it the people closest to you? Who defines how you live? Who do you chase after their approval? Who sets the stage and points the direction for your life? The people closest to you, or is it you? Are you the final say? Do you determine what's okay and what's not okay and how you live? Or have you come to that place where you say, you know what, Jesus, it's you. You're the Lord of my life. Because here's what he says. If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. That is a strong statement. He's saying, you can follow me with the crowd. You can be around me. You can be in proximity to me. I'll even help you have free food, and I'll even heal you and some of your family. But if you haven't settled this issue of who is the ultimate authority in your life, what is it that you ultimately live for? What is the primary, most important relationship? What is the thing that guides you, or the one that guides you above anything else? If you haven't settled that issue, you cannot be my disciple. He's saying you can be around me and not truly know me. And it's true today. I know people, you know people, I've been this person at seasons in my life where you can be in church, but the essence of the church not really in you. You can be in the crowd, but not really a part of following what Jesus teaches. You can have close proximity without connected relationship. Jesus is beginning to paint a picture that I think is important for us to understand at the beginning of the year. If you want to live the best year of your life so far, if you want to live the life God created you to live, if I want that, he's trying to communicate the essence of following Jesus is self-denial, not self-improvement. It's self-denial, not self-improvement. And that's so hard for us because so much about our lives is built where we focus on me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe in your life, everything is a means to an end. Every relationship you have, every possession you own, where you work, how you spend your money, everything is a means to an end, and you're the end. You're the most important part of your world. If something's broken in the marriage, it's your spouse's job to fix it. If there's conflict in the home, it's other people's fault. If you can't get along with people at work, it's because they're all dumb. If you're struggling financially, it's because the economy or it's because of other issues. You're never responsible for anything because you're awesome. But the essence of following Jesus is self-denial and not self-improvement. And we honestly don't want much of that. And Jesus knows that. So he goes further. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Carry their cross. Now, when he said cross in that culture in that day, it meant something very different. When you and I hear cross, we think shiny thing that hangs around your neck or the thing that hangs on the wall as a decoration or that piece of wood we've seen in the movie with Jesus where he's always white and everything works out fine. We think cross. When these people heard cross, they could smell the dying flesh because they'd smelled it. They thought brutality. They could hear the cries in agony. That one word, cross, terrified them. And Jesus is saying, whoever does not carry their cross, the thing that is going to bring the greatest burden, the thing that will cause the most intense pain, whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. And then he says in Mark, then he called the crowd to him. In Luke, he turns to the crowd, but this time he's being more intentional. Hey, come here. I want you to hear this. This is important. You need to get this. Come see me. Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Well, I thought following Jesus meant every prayer is answered. I thought following Jesus meant you're going to be rich. You're going to marry somebody that's hot. Your kids are going to have straight A's. Your bank account's going to be full. I thought following Jesus means you hit the lottery jackpot on a heaven scale. Because we think in terms of self-improvement, and we live in a way, we don't say this out loud, but we live in a way as though God was created to serve us instead of us being created to serve him. We flipped it where we're really God, and he's supposed to do what we ask because we prayed, and if he doesn't, we get really mad. But Jesus is saying, you can miss this incredible life that he has to offer if your entire focus, the person that stands at the front of the line, is you. And then he makes this statement. For whoever wants to save their life, isn't that all of us? You wear seatbelts, you buy insurance, you do things to protect yourself. We all want to preserve our life. We're all life savers. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Now, he's not talking about in the sense of you're going to die a physical death. I mean, that's going to happen to all of us eventually. But he's talking about something deeper. He's saying if you live with a goal of pleasing you, if you're trying to save your life, if you're trying to make all the decisions, if you're in control of you, your life will be a total loss. And if you spend your life trying to save your life, you'll lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. The gospel. It was the agenda of Jesus. The gospel simply means good news. The gospel is that there's a God who loved us so much that he sent his only son to pay the penalty for your sin and for mine, and he was willing to die and be murdered on a cross, and 3 days later, he got up. The gospel is there is a God who invites us to call him Father and wants to know us in a personal way and meant it so much and loved us so deeply that he did something about it and sent his son to make it possible. Whoever loses their life for me, whoever denies themselves, whoever says, no, not what I want, God, but what you want. To deny yourself is to say no to you so you can say yes to something bigger than you. To deny yourself is to say no to you so you can say yes to something bigger than you. So summarizing all that is the statement. Whoever devotes themselves to themselves will have nothing but themselves to show for themselves. We're consumed with living for me. We roll into a new year, and the thought is all about how can I, what can I, where do I? I don't want to give anything of me away. I want to increase what I have. I grew up in a home in Southeast Texas with two younger brothers, and every evening, our family would sit around the dinner table. We did that. We sat around the dinner table. We ate dinner together. And there were three teenage boys, and the minute my father said amen, it was like a bullet fired out of a gun. We all went for whatever the food was because you're not waiting. There are three teenage boys, even if it was tater tot casserole. Have you ever had tater tot casserole? It's like ground meat and then cream of mushroom soup, mushrooms and soup, and tater tots on top. I mean, just talking, I can feel my arteries clogging right now. Tater tot casserole, but it didn't matter what it was. We were after it. Nobody was waiting because if I don't jump, if I don't go first, if I don't grab it, somebody else is going to get it, and there won't be anything left for me. And part of the stress that comes with life is that we live like that. So at the end of your life, if people line up to thank you, or will people even have anything to thank you for? Because Jesus is saying, you are not enough to live for. You are not enough for you to live for. It's an invitation to significance. You want to matter more. You want your life to be bigger. You want to live the life God created you to live. It's beyond you. You have to empty yourself of you so God can fill you with his purpose. It's an invitation to purpose. Purpose matters. Now, when you hear purpose, especially students, you might think, I don't want to live for purpose. I'll tell you what I need for a good life. I need a car, and I know the one I've picked out. I need a job where I work a little and make a lot. And I need to marry a hottie. If I can do those three things, and if I can get a car and I know the one I want, and I can have a job where I work a little and I make a lot and I have all that money, and I can marry somebody where they look at me and say, I don't know about him, but look at her. So he must have something going on because look at her. I mean, if I can live in a way, what we want is to be envied. But when you come to the end of your life, all you have is you, and it's a total loss. There's a greater purpose than chasing what you think you want and what I think I want. And have you ever noticed that when you get what you want and when I get what I want, it doesn't take very long that it's not enough. There's always the next thing we want. There's a purpose for which you were created, and it's beyond you. There's a purpose for which I was created, and it's beyond me. And if this year's going to be different, you've got to live. I've got to live for something bigger than just us. Because that kind of life is a total loss. I think about people like Jeff and Monica Saffold, who are part of C3. Incredibly busy family. Jeff's an attorney, works in Ohio during the week, so he flies back and forth. On top of that, he coaches Pop Warner football. Incredible family. But you know what Jeff does? He also serves in the life of C3. And he's on a rotation where early in the mornings, even on cold mornings, even on the mornings that God lights a fire, Jeff shows up and helps set things up. And he has all the reasons. I mean, he works out of town most of the week. He's busy investing in his family. Monica shows up. She functions in some ways. She's the only parent during a lot of the week, staying busy, doing all that needs to be done, and yet they're here. He sets up. She serves on our connections team. They would have all the excuses in the world not to. But can I tell you a secret? Don't tell anybody this. This is a secret. We don't have anybody that serves in the life of C3 that does it because they have nothing else to do. We've never gotten the email that says, hey, Pastor, I'm bored. Can I do something? I don't have anything to do. Could you give me something to do? That's never happened. The people often that make the greatest difference have the busiest schedules. But they've learned to prioritize their lives because they don't want their life to be a total loss. I think they would say, those that serve in the life of C3, and there are hundreds that would say, it is difficult to go back to a normal everyday Sunday once you've tasted purpose. So what about you? Hey, it's a new year. And I'm going to love you enough to say something to you. Have you ever seen somebody that walked out of the house and maybe they showed up at work and what they're wearing, you think, oh my gosh, nobody loves them. They don't have a friend. Nobody said, hey, you shouldn't do that. You might be thinking that about me right now. You might be. And I might agree with you, but I live to please Jesus and my wife, so I really don't care. But you know, I'm going to love you enough for a minute just to kind of lean in. I don't know how you think you're going to live the life God created you to live if you function as a consumer and not a contributor in the organization that Jesus calls his bride. Hey, some of you, this is the year. You need to get off the sidelines and get in the game. You need to do something, make a deliberate decision where it's not just about you and what's convenient for you and what fits for you. And say, you know what? God created me, and he created me to be a part of the church, which is the hope of the world. God has such a high opinion of church that he calls it the bride of Jesus. I laugh sometimes because people say, you know what? I love God, but I don't like the church. I don't like the church. I can't stand the church. And I always want to say, and a couple of times that I have, and it usually doesn't go well, when I say, really, how would you feel if someone said, hey, sir, I like you, but I think your bride's freaking nuts. I can't stand her. How would you feel about that? How does God feel when we can be okay with living such a shallow life that so much is about me and I can't give an hour a week for God and for others? So I knew you might be thinking once I said that, and you've probably already been pondering it. I knew you might think, man, you're right. This year, I want it to be different. This year, I want to live for something bigger than me. I want there to be a line at the end of my life, if possible, where people would thank me for making a difference, for giving of my time, for giving of my resources, for giving of my intentions, for making them a little bit of a focus. Man, I want to make a difference. That's awesome. You can text C3Serve, space, your first name, to 313131. And have a conversation with one of our team this week in the life of C3 that'll let you know about different opportunities. It's just a conversation to say, hey, how could I make it work with my schedule and my demands? Because this year, I want to live for something bigger than me. And you might think, that I don't know how to do that. I mean, that's going to cost me. I don't know how I would work that out. Hey, purpose will cost you something, but living without it will cost you everything. You need to do this. Purpose is always found just beyond what's in it for me. Purpose is always embraced and felt and experienced just on the other side of what's in it for me. So in 2018, the best thing that you could do for you has very little to do with you. It is in your best interest not to be so interested in you. Let God take care of that. Be willing to empty yourself and give of some time to make a difference. So I have to ask you the same question I asked you last week. What breaks your heart? What is that thing that when you hear about it in the community or you read about it in society, what is that thing that every time it comes up, your heart is pricked? What breaks your heart? For me, there are many things, but what floats to the top of the list are people that live this life feeling disconnected from God. People that experience everything you and I do in life, the good days and the bad days, the pain, the doubts, the brokenness, the shame, the guilt, but have to roll through life not knowing what it is to be deeply loved by God. Never experiencing the morning of today is going to be tough. We're going to that meeting and she says she doesn't love me anymore. And I don't know how I'm going to get through it. But I know somehow God's with me. Or the day where they walk into the doctor's office with their 8-year-old and they get the news and it doesn't look good. The emotional and mental devastation that brings on a unique level when you're not able to know even in that moment, God is with me. I can't see it all, but He can. See, hope is not a fantasy that we hope works out. If you're a follower of Jesus, your hope is anchored in the reality of who God is and what Jesus has done. I'm grateful that even in my brokenness, even though I'm messed up, I can wake up and every single day that I live, I'm not trying to live and make decisions and make choices so that somehow God will be pleased with me. I get to live from a perspective of I can't imagine how much God has loved me, all that He's already done for me. I don't live my life to try to get something from God. I live my life as a thank you to God for what He's already done. And part of that is saying, I can give an hour a week. What breaks your heart? The local church is the hope of the world. And if you're a follower of Jesus and you consider C3 your church, I wouldn't be a good pastor and I wouldn't be a good friend if I didn't say to you, hey man, this year's the year you need to step up. You need to get off the sidelines and get in the game and make a difference with the you that God is giving you because we are missing out and you are missing out. But beyond that, what breaks your heart in the church? What breaks your heart outside the church? And who's doing something about that? In the church, there's a role for everybody, but in community and life, is there an organization that's doing something about things you're passionate with that you could give some time to? How can you help? What is it that you can do? Because if you answer these questions, and you owe it to yourself to do that, and you figure out what breaks your heart, and you decide, I'm going to give an hour a week that I don't have to make a difference in the life of a church, and I'm going to look for ways somewhere else, an hour or two a week, to make a difference in community and what's going on around me. Did you know that if you and I watch TV 30 minutes less a day, just 30 minutes, if you live to the average age, you would have cut out almost an entire year of your life that you would get back. 30 minutes a day. 7 days a week. That's 3.5 hours a week. I'm talking about an hour inside, an hour outside. What breaks your heart? Who's doing something about that, and how can you help? You answer those questions. You won't have to worry about what your obituary looks like. And there will be people, and there will be some people that you don't even know their name. But because you served on a Sunday and you helped people know where to park in a parking lot and you didn't know their name, or you held a door open for somebody with a smile and it was the only smile they'd seen in a week, or you took some kids and C3 kids when they checked in, you helped them check in, or maybe you were in the room where you invested in those kids for an hour and it's the only time somebody seemed like they cared all week, and you gave a single mom a reason to have hope again. You let a teenager know that there are adults that do live in a way that is positive and loving. You're used by God to help love and heal people that are broken. Which, let's not forget, that was all of us. And somebody showed you where to park, and somebody opened the door for you the first time you came, and somebody watched your kids when you brought them. Somebody helped you find a seat in a dark room with disco flashlights that flash sometimes and strobe. This year can be different, but only if you allow this to be a moment that doesn't pass. If you allow it to be a moment that creates a momentum in your life, what will people thank you for? Let's pray together.